James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio. I've got a great show tonight. I've got Scott Stevens, an award-winning former television weatherman. And he discovered this global warming weather modification program going on, and it's probably why he's off the air right now. But I can go much further into that, but I want to bring Scott on right away to get into this subject. Scott, are you with us?
Hi, James. How are you tonight?
I'm just curious. Have you gotten any other weather forecasting jobs since then?
You know, I haven't really looked. You know, I've had the opportunity to go out. You know, after what I went through in 2005, you know, I just didn't figure that, you know, that I wanted to get right back into the same box. You know, because another station, another general manager, another news director, you know, would have to go through, you know, what I just did. You know, you know, chemtrails is not, and weather modification is not necessarily something you're going to turn on your 6 o'clock news and have your weatherman talking about. You know, it isn't the place, believe it or not. That's not the place you go to have those topics discussed. It's what happened today, and it's the forecast and that happy talk, and that's it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I just really felt that it was more important that I'd be able to talk about some of these larger issues without those constraints. So,
I'm glad you have, you know, moved in that direction. I know back in, I can't remember when it was. It was quite a few years ago when these chemtrails first started, and I got William Thomas and a blood specialist and an environmentalist and all of these people on board, and we went on Channel 11 here locally.
Mm-hmm.
And,
KSTP, I think.
Yeah, and we just covered the whole enchilada on this. And and next thing you know, we had a very low-level spray come over the ranch, and what was interesting is the chickens started dropping. They started falling over, and we had all this chest pain on the right side of us, and we got our own personal little dose for going public.
Yeah, I know. If you want to talk about it, then these are the consequences. You know,
exactly.
And they kind of have the resources to come at you in ways that are going to be overt, like what you experienced, or more
mm-hmm.
subtle ways. You know, so it's, you know, you enter this arena at your own risk, you know.
Oh, yeah.
So, but I think most of us just kind of, we have that passion, and, you know, the side effects, if you will, be damned. You know, this is something that needs to be
mm-hmm.
heard and said and done so with, you know, with some semblance of integrity. So, No, you're fine.
Well, you know, I moved up and way out in the middle of the boondocks here on this 70-acre ranch, and, you know, I said, I just want to get back to nature, just live a wholesome life, you know, in harmony with each other and the planet, and kind of step out of society, and, you know, that was my program. And then I realized, you know, I saw what was happening everywhere, to the water, to the air, to the land, and I'm going to get my own little space and just let it work itself out, and then... And then I found out there are no spaces to go to. That, you know, no matter where I went, you know, here this toxic, you know, concoctions were being sprayed on us, and it's very sad. And to me, I love this planet, and I love the Earth and the people on it, and that's really what motivates me in going forward. But
I'm sure
as you.
Well, we're all connected. You know, we all breathe that same air. You know, that atmosphere, you know, sustains, you know, a large part of this biosphere. It is an
mm-hmm.
integral part of the harmony of the ecosystem of this planet, as are the oceans. You know, and it's hard to sit back and see such blatant action going on in the skies and in the water, for that matter. You know, without having, you know, environmental impact statements and public discourse and, you know, an evaluation as to whether the investment and what's going on up there, you know, is worth the end result. And for some person, it is, or for some group of people, it is, and it is absolutely, and they will keep doing it. The question is, you know, what's the real cost? You know, what is the real goal? You know, is it truly geoengineering, where they're trying to reflect shortwave and longwave energy back out into space to keep the planet from overheating? And if you look at that that argument that that's what they may be doing out there, then how do you account for the planet cooling for the last 15 years? You know, and that was one of the topics on the Bilderberg agenda this last June was global cooling. And then you get into the ClimateGate papers that were released last November, and the dudes out of National Centers for Atmospheric Research saying, how do we hide the cooling that's been going on for 15 years? You know, so there's this whole other political agenda that the weather modification and chemtrails and climate change, you know, all of that and taxation and global taxation, it's all wrapped up, and it's quite a big enchilada for you, for people to try to bite off. It's not something that you're capable of doing on the evening news, you know, let alone on 60 Minutes. You know, there's a lot of information there that most people simply don't have the context to process. So, you know, that then we look up and we see the planes in the sky, and what's a guy to do?
So. Yeah, we up here we watch this just constantly, and we're about 2,000 feet at the base of Mount Adams, and there's several things going on here. One is, I mean, we're just watching heavy chemtrail spraying, and everybody's coming down with these upper respiratory problems, you know, intestinal, gastrointestinal problems, joint pain. You know, it seems to be really knocking down people's immune systems right now.
Those are all the
effects of barium and aluminum and the other things that they're spraying up there.
You know, and part of the chemtrail count relates to where you are on the latitude scale.
Mm-hmm.
And it's also varies by season. You know, most of the blatant chemtrail action happens 1 to 2 days out from a storm's arrival. You know, that's when you begin to get the high cirrus clouds that they go through and literally connect and create these cirrus shields. And with all of the metallic aspects and the ionization aspects, ionizable salts that they're adding to the sky, they've been able to increase the conductivity of the vertical profile of the atmosphere nearly fourfold. And
wow.
So when you look at the kind of tools that they have to work with, whether it's scalar, whether it's acoustic, whether it's orgon-based, or whether it's literally just directed energy vibrational pulses coming from, you know, low, from above, you know, then they need these trails up there, and they need layers of the atmosphere to luminesce differently than other layers. And once we begin to dig deeply into this, we understand that they're creating a resultant geometry to shape and guide the jet stream, and that geometry needs to be observed at all times, and that's what these planes go out and do. They'll trace up the skies to observe how the vibrations that they've introduced into the atmosphere are actually impacting that river of air up there. And then when you add in, you know, let's just say for example, HARP. You know, if they need to pulse northwestern Arkansas with HARP, then how do they identify exactly where they need to pulse? They go out, they lay out a sortie of trails. They'll lay out squares, they'll lay out grids, and then they have to pulse. And then they watch how those trails deform, and then give it some time. And if they're happy as they take that data back into their computer models and generate a forecast, if they're happy with, you know, what they just did, they'll leave it alone. If they're not happy, they'll run another marking routine. The planes will go back out, leave trails, they'll hit the sky again, and measure the effect that pulse has had.
Mm-hmm.
So where you find these chemtrails is exactly where they're doing the weather modification. What we struggle with is, so I see them, I'm here in southern Colorado, and we get a lot of sunny skies.
Mm-hmm.
But I also have some substantial airports, you know, from Albuquerque and Denver and Salt Lake, a good distance towards the northwest. But there's a whole other fleet of aircraft that are working the skies, you know, and they're painted up to look like Southwest. But there's no Southwest planes there. There's no United. There's no Lufthansa. There's no British Airways. They're all conscripted aircraft to fly this geometry that they use to capture the jet stream. And, as you said, the fallout is substantial.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we're talking millions of tons of these particles over who knows what kind of time span. I've had pictures sent to me that are dated 1976, Ohio. There's the chemtrails. And I'm like, oh boy, this baby's old. This dog has been hunting for a while.
Yeah, definitely has. There's, you know, it seems to be, to me, there's more going on because they, as you said, they're using some kind of other skater waves or HARP technology or whatever in conjunction with these chemtrails. And, you know, it just brought to my attention recently, they have these, they call them the HAD frequencies, and they stand for hypnotic agitation and disruption. And they can actually shoot these out through cell towers or these Gwyn towers or HARP or, you know, other ways of transmitting, even through satellites. And
oh,
it seems like if they're ground-based, they would need something to bounce off of if they were trying to hit a certain location, you know, with these frequencies. And it would be a direct correlation in trying to keep the Earth frequencies down or the consciousness down on Earth, because everybody would just be basically scrambled, you know, with these energies. Wherever they saw a major awakening happening or power centers on the planet or whatever, they could actually use these technologies to
shut
them off, basically.
Yeah, and don't think that they haven't. You know, I think absolutely there is. I think the thing that they fear the most, and this should probably give us the greatest satisfaction, mm-hmm. is our awakening. You know, that is what they fear the most. And so ultimately that is what we must strive for with the most zeal, with the most passion, not uncovering, you know, conspiracies and praying for disclosure, but working on you and me so we become that awake and aware person. Because mm-hmm. as we go through that ascendant process, then our, quote-unquote, GPA goes up, and then the whole classes goes up.
Mm-hmm.
And so it is you, it is you, it is you, it has always been you. And they have so many things to entrap our attention. You know, I think at some point the truth of the why of the BP disaster will come out. The same for 9/11. The same for mm-hmm. Kennedy. All of these things will be in time disclosed. And that will keep a great number of people enraptured with their story, you know, as mm-hmm. they reveal themselves. And that keeps you away from where you really need to be. And that is centered.
Yeah, I agree. I agree 100%. The back to the chemtrails. There's so people have had so many questions from people like, what is the program? And I don't know if you know. Hopefully, you know more than I do about it. But I can't tell any. I said, you know, I'm getting reports about biologicals. I'm seeing people getting really sick after they do this heavy spraying. I'm hearing so many different agendas. I said, I don't even know where to start on this. And maybe it's all the above.
I think once you go out and secure a fleet of globally probably upwards of 2,500 aircraft, mm-hmm. and you outfit them with who knows what kind of surveillance equipment and dispersing technologies and payload capacities, and there are so many things you can do with it. It isn't mm-hmm. going to be a one-task project. You know, it's going to, I think, the whole gamut. And, in fact, I first came across chemtrails as I was reading Rents.com in 1999. Mm-hmm. And I was obviously fascinated. And then 2001 and 9/11 happened, and then I really jumped into the conspiracy and the alternative news field. It just there was a hunger there that I couldn't get satisfied. And more chemtrail stories were coming up. And I would go to Barry and Blues, and I would go to Chemtrail Central, and I didn't like what I was finding there. I didn't like their conclusions, their speculation. I didn't like how they treated the meteorological aspect of it. And so about 2002, I thought, you know, I can figure this out. You know, I can figure out if there's anything to this. And so I bought a digital camera, and I really pulled my attention skyward for more than just a little glance. Because up until then, I would look at the sky, you know, just kind of assess the kind of clouds and the current weather conditions and, mm-hmm. and knew where I was in a storm. But I started to pick the clouds apart, and I began to see things that were just a little strange as far as geometry and resonance patterns and waves and so forth in the clouds. And I was kind of given the heads up from Lieutenant Colonel Tom Bearden's website, and he had a sidebar which was Soviet weather engineering. And, well, that fascinated me, because at the time I was really into zero-point energy and energy from the ether, because it just seemed like we had an energy crisis on the way in this planet. And so I was kind of looking at, you know, what can I do? Is there any technology out there from some small inventor I can go out and buy and have installed in the house so I'm off the grid? And so that's kind of what I was doing, and came across this weather engineering. Well, that led me to a lot of photography in 2002, especially 2003 and 2004. And by 2004, I was aware of the chemtrails, but I still didn't believe I had seen one yet. And that's the crazy thing, is how could I not have seen them? You know, and then I was digging back through pictures, and I'd already started photographing them back in 1988. So, you know, it was one day in August of 2004. I was standing out in the front yard. I was living in Pocatello, Idaho. Skies were blue from horizon to horizon, and there's this 747, you know, with a big green tail on the back, and I still have yet to identify that airline. And it was leaving this persistent contrail that went from the northeast horizon to the southwest horizon. And I was like, holy crap, that's a chemtrail. Mm-hmm. And that was the realization, you know, that there it was for me. And so then a couple of months later, I put cameras up around the house to begin time-lapse photography, not for the planes, but for the clouds. I wanted to see what these scalar acoustic waves were doing to the clouds, because I wanted to generate a more accurate forecast for my audience. And about 4 months into that photography exercise, there was one of my webcams caught a series of flights out towards the southwest. The light was just right. I got enough pictures, and I'm like, and there were six planes, and I think it was about the third plane left one of those marking contrails, and it started to dissipate in a segment. And then two planes came up right, you know, at a 90-degree angle, and then crossed that previous chemtrails gap or opening. One of them kissed the end where the trail ended, and the other one bisected the exact middle of it. Mm-hmm. And I'm like, oh, it's about geometry. It's about geometry. So they fly these trails with these moisture-sensitive salts. So they'll fluoresce where the atmosphere is excited in some degree. Is it the argon that's excited? Is it because at that spot there is a lift in the atmosphere? Is there an ascending wave? You know, I didn't know. But ultimately, I've seen all of those examples and have photographed all those examples. But as I'll sit out here, you know, and watch the sky and watch the planes, There are two sets of aircraft. There's aircraft that probably carry passengers, and they're on regular routes, and they largely fly the short chemtrails, the ones that dissipate in 2, 3, 4, 5 seconds. They're pink, they're blue, they're orange. You know, they're different colors depending on the metals and the particulates that they've got on board. And I think the technology that they're using requires that there be a certain particulate per cubic meter, per cubic yard, you know, constantly up there, so they have a grip or a hold on the atmosphere, so that they can propagate their waves and see them through certain frequencies from satellites in space. And then I think there's the other fleet, which is the dedicated chemtrail aircraft. And they're the ones that do the precise flying. Because truly, it's an aerial dance when you see them up there. The precision is utterly stunning. And that leads me to think that they're participating in their introduction of the vibrations of the resonances into the atmosphere, along with some of these ground-based technologies. So that's just one man's view. from the top of the mountain.
yeah, so I think it's pretty accurate. You know, we've watched here, we've watched these planes come in, and then they make a hard U-turn, two of them, at the same time, and then they go back the other way.
Yep.
And so we've got that on film, too. And I just said, okay, name me one airliner that that goes halfway to its destination and then makes a hard U-turn and goes back the other way. And then we have these other...
to Tokyo.
Yeah, like, oh, shoot, we forgot some luggage. We got to go back, you know. I go, they just don't do that. And then I saw this other one. I saw two jetliners taken off from Portland Airport go up, and they crossed pretty close to this Kim trailer, and all the way up, didn't leave a trail, all the way up, past it, went up through it, past it, and here's this big, thick Kim trail, horizon to horizon, going by, and so you have to ask, okay, why is that plane leaving a massive Kim trail, and the other two, which actually, you know, went right next to it, one went in front, one went behind it, and went from a lower elevation to even higher elevation than this one, why didn't they leave a chemtrail if this is some kind of ice condensation program or, I mean, a contrail, you know? So, anyway,
it's just a straight-up just engine exhaust, then they should be behaving substantially similar.
Exactly.
And they don't. They don't, and that's because it's not engine exhaust. But you try telling that to meteorology students and other TV weathermen. It's really... it's a lot more work than I thought it would be.
Yeah.
I thought they'd be more open-minded, but they're locked in their little world, and you just have to let them be.
Oh, yeah, we've done tests here on the water and things like that, and I know in Mount Shasta they did tests there, and they found out just extreme levels of barium and aluminum and things that went way off the charts of where you're supposed to notify the EPA, who won't touch it either. And you know, we actually called senators here and congressmen and everything, and just, you know, I had chemical engineers, all these people on board, and they go, oh no, it's I called the admiral or whatever, or I called the Air Force base commander, and he said, oh no, they're just contrails, nothing to worry about. And that was as far as their extent went into it. And I had this one chemical engineer friend of mine, and he was calling them saying, no, wait, I'm a chemical engineer. You know, I have friends that are pilots and everything. We're watching this. We're taking samples. You know, you're not doing any research at all, and you're making these statements just off of what somebody said. And they're saying your statements don't correspond with the facts and with the data. It's a no-brainer. But it's amazing that one of the people that we talked to, she went and looked into it and talked to an Air Force official, and basically he told her, if you love your family and if you want to continue in your career, you'll shut up.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Well,
and it scared the hell out of her, you know? So,
well,
I mean...
imagine what would happen if on the weekend edition of USA Today, the truth were told about all of these weather disasters that have happened, not just in the States, but globally, for the last 30, 40 years. I mean, how many people have been victimized by God, aka the weather, you know, in the last 50 years? And that number is enormous. And so you open this floodgate of litigation that would be incredible, probably just as bad as the mortgage mess litigation is going to end up being. You know, and that's one of the reasons why there is incredible incentive for them not to let the secret out. So, you know, and it may be that, you know, once that does come to light and there is that public understanding, we're just going to have to literally, you know, just say that was then and this is now. And we just have to move forward without, you know, trying to litigate and deal with the look what you did to me mentality that, you know, is so prevalent in this society with our need to sue.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I don't think the American consciousness is adult enough to do that. They're just not big enough.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah, they definitely haven't shown that in the past.
No.
We were talking about earlier about how we need to have some kind of truth and forgiveness panel, like just some good old boys, you know, girls, that don't have any agenda or anything, that and they're going to be on these panels and they're going to oversee this. And, you know, if you ask forgiveness and you come clean with what's going on and you become part of the solution, then, you know, no problem. You know, you're okay. But if you want to continue with it and continue in with the negative programs that are harmful to humanity, Earth, then you'll suffer the consequences. And like they did in Africa, South Africa. But that's about the only way I think this will be solved, because there's too many people that were following orders, that did what they were told, and they're afraid of coming forward because of the consequences.
Well, and they knew what they were doing was not right. You know, and I don't know how many soldiers have just said, I was following orders. You know, and that's what's happening in the skies now. You know, and who knows what other covert black ops operations, you know, have been in the news and have been blamed on an angry planet. You know, what about the Banda Aceh, you know, tidal wave, you know, tsunami. Mm-hmm. You know, the list of earthquakes that could have man's fingerprints on them over the last 40, 50 years could be very long. That could be very, very long list, you know. And so, you know, our military and our black ops and our governments, you know, there's the face that they show us, and then there's the truth. And I don't think any, you know, Republican, Democrat, Tea Partiers would be happy. You know, I think we would all be universally disgusted.
Yeah.
So, but
we
heard
it. Yeah.
Yeah.
If we were to know the truth, I think people would be so disgusted and just so, they would just, I mean, there would be such a, you know, I don't know. Alrighty, we're back. Obviously, we must be hitting a nerve out there because the whole stream went down, my lines went down, everything kind of went down here, so we're still trying to get Scott back on the line, and hopefully we can get back on the line. But this isn't uncommon, you know, when we get into these issues. As I said before, when I was doing an LA station interview about UFOs and really laying it out there, all of a sudden, mysteriously, the line went down, and then they set it up on another line, called me back on another line, that line went down. They called me back on another line, that line went down. So they said I had the record four lines going down in a row. So they're on four separate lines there to keep their show going as backups, and I guess all four went down. So it's not uncommon. Obviously, we're over the target because somebody's taken a great interest in us and seem to be clicking off our lines. So I'm sure that all of you have the same feeling I do. It just kind of drives me to go further and getting this information out, getting the truth out. So anyway, that being as it may, we have experienced some just intense chemtrailing up here. I mean, everybody here is just fed up with it. And it's just gotten beyond ridiculous. The snowpack is just layered with aluminum and barium. The bugs are dying. The larvae's dying. The fish aren't getting enough to eat. And, you know, we watched our crops just greatly diminished. They're seeing the grass is actually about one-third of what it should be due to these barium salts and these other things that they're spraying. And, you know, if you want to take out a farm, you just spray salt on it, basically, and that'll kill all your crops. And that's the old biblical trick, you know. When you wanted to get rid of a group, you went and just seeded their you know, crops with salt, and that took care of it. So, you know, anyway, I don't know who's behind this whole thing, but you know, it's a very short-sighted thing. The scientists behind it are bought and paid for. And so if anybody's telling you they're doing a good thing for humanity and the Earth and they're up there on our behalf, I would highly question that intention, because obviously the byproduct is the opposite of what they're saying. So anyway, these chemtrails are getting worse and worse. People are having more upper respiratory problems. People are having extreme intestinal disorders. We're watching, you know, incredible muscle and joint pain. People getting real lethargic. Their immune system becoming very weak. And, you know, this fits quite nicely into a global population control. So there's more to the story, and whoever's behind it, it's very clear that we've lost all control of our government, of our military, and any other aspect, even the news. And luckily, Scott has been brave enough to come forward after speaking about this on the news. He ended up losing his job, so as many other reporters. We had a reporter report on the UFO activity up here, and we don't know where he went. He just went off the air, and he's gone, basically. So we've still been trying to find him and track him down, and we called the news station. They said, well, we don't have any idea. You know, we have no idea. And I go, well,
right,
we saw
Scott,
the coverage.
Scott,
you know, it was on there. Okay, I think we've got Scott back. Scott, are you with us?
Hi, James. It's Scott.
Hey, thanks for hanging in there with us.
Yeah, no problem, man. I wouldn't miss it for the world. I did want to comment that when we were there for the July 4th conference this year, that there was quite a lot of chemtrail activity above the sky, the Field of Dreams there, and it seems like it happened one morning really early, and then all of a sudden they just kind of disappeared. Like there was a great wind that came and just wiped everything away, and I thought that was a really nice omen.
Yeah, we kind of asked for that and got it. There are higher forces at play, and they can, you know, actually come in and help us out. But every once in a while they'll come in and just, you know, clear the skies you know, make things nice again. But
do you find that you're getting a lot of chemtrail activities in the recent days, or was that just kind of a fluke because there were so many people there?
Basically, it's kind of it's an ongoing thing, but I know whenever we have major gatherings, that right on track, whenever we have a major gathering there, or we have a Yigong or a Kunlun workshop, or we bring in some major teacher, that they seem to give us a nice big dose of chemtrails overhead, and that's usually when the UFOs come in too. So they like to really cloud the skies up and make it nasty out there, so we're not out, you know, watching the UFOs and letting more people see them.
Yeah, I remember when I was there for the Kunlun Level 1 workshop about a month and a half ago, there were definitely some clouds up in the sky, and my friend Sean actually pointed it out. You know, he said, wow, you know, that's a funny-looking cloud up there. Yeah, well.
Yeah. Hopefully we can get our other Scott on the line and talk about it. You know, we've got, I think we lost him altogether, but he's out there in Colorado. I wanted to talk about he's had some amazing UFO sightings too, so he said he'd love to talk about that if we can get him back on the air.
Okay.
But
I recently spent a week with Dr. Stephen Greer with the CSETI project.
Yeah.
Down in Mount Shasta, California, and I could tell you a little bit about that.
Well, did they chemtrail you while you were there?
They didn't, but we sure had a lot of jet and helicopter activity. And guys
yeah.
in blacked out Suburbans, by the way.
Uh-huh.
Matter of fact, there were people that even approached us in the parking lot of our hotel and were pretending to be people that had supposedly just driven up there, and there were these two, you know, unassuming women, and they kept asking us all these probing questions about, where are you guys, and what have you been doing, and, oh, yeah, we've been just driving around and following our intuition, and I didn't believe it for a second. You know, there were people listening in to us in the coffee shops and things, but there was one afternoon where we got buzzed by a helicopter. And it was really, though, it couldn't have been more than 1,000 feet. And I remember when the helicopter went over, you know, all of us were watching it, and it had this large camera on the front of it with a great big lens. And about 5 minutes after it passed, I just got the most angry, irritated emotions running through me. And I was angry for about 2 or 3 hours afterward. And I mentioned that to a couple of the people that were there, and they said, oh, yeah, you know, that happens all the time. They'll use these psychotronic weapon systems, radionic systems, that can actually affect your emotion and your personality by, you know, interacting with certain frequencies of your brain waves. And we had lots of jets crossing constantly, and there were guys in blacked-out Suburbans that were within 5 feet of the property we were at. So, you know, when you get
those
truths, sometimes they cut you off.
Yeah, we kind of stay away from the government side of things, you know, and the government disclosure, and work more with the higher vibrations and the higher ETs. But it doesn't matter. We still get those guys now and then. But I think the people that are really going up against, you know, the deception and all the cover up and everything else on a government level, you know, trying to get the whistleblowers to come forward, they usually get a little bonus. But, you know, we've had these black helicopters fly over, and one had a, did you see a bubble underneath the bottom of it, kind of like a bubble with equipment in it, like a light?
Yeah, there was definitely some kind of an equipment bubble on the bottom.
Yeah. Yeah, and this one flew over us, and it had this blue light emitting from it, bright blue light. And what I noticed is when it flew over, it did. Everybody got kind of sick and agitated and everything. But I know if you build your fields up, it doesn't affect you as much. You know, you can push that energy out because they're trying to move through your other fields. You know, and create, as we talked before, those really agitation and disruption energies. And the trick is to go, not mine, you know. When you feel this energy, just go, okay, not mine. This isn't mine. Call on your higher self to come in and clear that energy out. But if you wait too long, it becomes part of your field, and it becomes really sickening, actually, to even be in this type of energy. Are you there? Looks like we lost our other Scott. Well, this is getting really interesting here. People just dropping off right and left. But definitely, there's a lot going on out there, folks, and it's not in our highest and best good. Great. I think we got Scott Stevens back on.
Well, this is the first time, James, this has happened to me.
It
seriously is. I've really kind of been amazed that I've been able to do 200, 250 interviews. You know, all over the world, and not have one drop until just now. That's pretty cool.
Yeah, we have this. I have two shows, and I've also done a lot of other shows for people, and they're just getting dropped right and left, and some are pre-recorded, and they haven't been doing too much on those, the pre-recorded shows. It's the live ones. But I guess I'm covering every subject they don't want people to know about. So I'm
shame on you.
Yeah. Hey, we can go. I don't know if you're available. We can go a little over the hour if you're up to that. And
Not a problem.
You know, being that we've been cut off, you know, changing the subject a little bit. I know that you're over there in Colorado, right next to an area where it is basically a UFO hotspot, and there's a lot of activity in there. Have you seen much flying around in your area?
Yeah, I left up the Front Range just this past spring. Dream guidance was getting rather intense that it was time to get off the Front Range and get into the San Luis Valley. And I've settled in a little town called Crestone. And it's a sweet little community, really, really a sweet. So we're up at 8,000 feet, and, you know, there's all the talk about, you know, the UFOs and the activity and the mysterious San Luis Valley, and, you know, there's a little UFO watchtower just down on County Road 17 and or State Road 17, and there's something to this valley. I'll give you that. You know, there's something here. Just the geography itself is very, very interesting. Where you've got the two-layered aquifer, you've got the magnetite, you've got all of the quartz mountains ringing it, you've got the sand dunes. There's energetically, there is something very unique about the San Luis Valley. And it wasn't but, I don't think we'd moved in yet. And I saw my first UFO down here. So, and then last night, you know, with the Draconoid meteor shower that, you know, peaked, you know, early afternoon, and I'm still going to go outside and look. I'm going to bundle up, grab a chair, and go, you know, go watch. And, you know, it wasn't 40 seconds, and there was something in the sky that we're like, ah, that's interesting, you know. Mm-hmm. So it happens. There must be portals in and out of this planet, or they've got, you know, cloak stuff in the mountains and old caverns. Who knows? But there's some interesting things going on down here.
Yeah, I've heard a lot about that area, and I know there's a lot of Buddhist temples and people of various disciplines, you might say, that have moved into that area just because of the energies there. And it's very similar to our area here. The Native Americans call this the New Eden, and this is, they say that this is where people will start over, you know, after the changes. So, I know there are.
Yeah, and that was one of the exciting things, you know, about being here and up at 8,000 feet and a couple of mountain ranges, you know, on either side, protecting you from the ocean, provided it gets antsy and wants to go splashing inland in some great measure. You know, and there has certainly been no shortage of visions shared amongst many, many people that an event like that will happen. So, you know, it was kind of...
I've had those
yeah,
visions.
You had those.
And
huh?
Recently, too. Yeah, this, you know, I have some friends that, and I know some younger people that are very tapped in, and they're not into this stuff at all. They're not into any of the prophecies or the visions or anything, and they don't know what to do with it because they're having these visions of extreme earth changes coming and pulse waves hitting the planet and the grids going down and huge waves covering over certain areas and things like that. And you know, they don't even want to look at it. They don't want to know about it, and it's really distressing them. But they're reoccurring. They're having them over and over and over again, and they're gifted, but they don't have any place to express themselves.
Well, and then they have to be shown, because once the changes, you know, the big changes kind of get underway, they're the seed. They're the seed to repopulate, you know. And I wonder if, you know, all of the abductions that have gone on, you know, that's a different set of seed, you know, a different genetic library or profile that isn't leaving this planet, leaving it for good. And, you know, the remnants that are left behind, you know, and there's absolutely going to be a genetic upgrade. And I wonder if those people that aren't sharing those visions and being shown those things, you know, aren't going to be participants in that genetic upgrade. Or maybe we shouldn't even call it upgrade, but restoration.
Mm-hmm. I think maybe they already have, you know, been upgraded. You know, it's... We've seen that. I've seen that over and over again, where you'll see a family and there'll be like four kids in the family, and maybe two of them are, you know, one family, I won't mention any names, but, you know, it's a Mexican family, and two of their kids are blonde-haired, blue-eyed, have white orbs around their heads, you know. And the other two are very dark-skinned and dark hair, you know. So it's real obvious when you look at this, you go... You know, and then the parents start talking about missing time and being taken and going to bed and find themselves back in bed, tucked in. The sheets are all tucked in around them when they were never tucked in before. All their jewelry taken off and set on the nightstand, and they don't remember any of it. And it's real interesting when you hear the stories, and then you look at the kids, you go, this is undeniable. This is like the... You know, real strong, and the girl is very tapped into the Palladian energies and very connected with the Palladian system, and it's obvious that there was some kind of an upgrade happening there.
Who's your daddy?
Yeah, exactly. Your daddy's from the stars, you know. So,
and he likes the Earth women.
Yeah, exactly. So,
no,
but, you know, you see what came out of it. It's pretty awesome, you know, that what came out of that experience. But go ahead.
You know, they're just bodies. You know, they're beautiful thing, but they're bodies. They're bodies to, you know, to house a consciousness, an awareness, a soul. You know, and you, these this model has served us well, but this is not the be all end all. This is not the latest and the greatest. It, you know, it's that there are beautiful, beautiful things coming. There really are. And, you know, if we have to leave our bodies to participate in a new physical expression, then so be it. You know, and we all need to be very comfortable with the continuity of life, regardless of a physical body. That's something we need to come to terms with.
Oh yeah, I have no doubt about that, and I'm fully aware of many of my other reincarnations. But, you know, this time I want to take the body with me. I want to ascend it, you know, take it up so I can come back and not have to come back in diapers and pick up a new ego and personality and have to deal with that again.
Yeah, a whole other set of karmic lessons to work your way through. It's just that first grade gets me every time. It's like,
yeah.
Oh, being a child.
Have to wake up all over again, you know, and hopefully make a good choice. You know, my next parents are not going to be on this planet, that's for sure. If I leave this body, I've already set it up, I'm going somewhere else.
Bragger.
But, yeah. No, actually, I love the Earth. I totally love the Earth. I would love to come back and see a whole and healthy planet and people living in harmony with each other and nature. And that's been my focus, actually, is to create a template here that people could come and learn and experience and then go off and build their own template.
You know, and at the same time, this experience, this last 6,000 years, has been an incredibly rich experience for so many individuals. You know, we've been here many, many times, and you know, our oversoul probably has an incarnation present or two, you know, continuously through this cycle. And, you know, so we've gathered up a wealth of wisdom, I would hope, you know, and it just kind of feels like to me that quote unquote harvest this time, or those that get to evolve beyond the school, isn't going to be huge, but I think it'll be a pretty sweet graduating class, if you will.
There's so many different classes going on too. I'm seeing, you know, there are people that are totally plugged in with the Star Nations, and they'll have their experience. And you know, there's people that are going to ride things all the way through, and there's people that are going to take the downward spiral all the way into total collapse, and that's the way they've chosen to learn their lessons, you know, as an eternal being. So, you know, I asked about the changes once, and they said that there's as many realities unfolding as there are people.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's the gift of it all. And we've got an eternity to work it out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so there's nobody ever left behind, and nobody's ever going to hell forever. That's just such a sorry illusion to live in.
Yeah.
You know, that the Father isn't much more kind and loving and considerate and beautiful than you know what most of us were raised with. You know,
yeah, I heard the Montauk program. What they did, they went back in time and they cut down the apple tree. So the biting that apple didn't put us in original sin, so we can all relax now.
Well, I thought they just planted a peach tree instead.
Yeah, that would be fine.
Or was it an avocado?
Yeah.
You know, before we get too deep out of time, I want to mention one of my other projects, because you know, with the weather and you know all of the fear that can surround, you know, the conspiracy aspect.
Mm-hmm.
You know, when you look up and you see that crap in the skies and you're like, oh
yeah.
You know, I from about 2008 through a good chunk of 2009, I stepped back from that work because I just didn't want to participate in the creation of fear for people.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause you can do that. You know, and I backed away from David Icke, you know, like, you know, 8, 9, mm-hmm. 10 years ago, because he was so deep into the reptilians. And I'm like, I don't need that in my head. You know, it doesn't mean it isn't true. I just don't need that in my head.
Yeah.
And, you know, so the spirituality and the consciousness aspect and trying to expand that has always been, you know, a core part of you know, the reason for living. You know, you kind of become a seeker at some point. You're looking. It's like the salmon going upstream. There's something you know you're going to find. You're looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And I met a person last year, and he introduced me to, you know, something called Ormus. And you know, it was all about, well, in old times it was called the mana, or the milk and honey.
Mm-hmm.
And when you come to understand the physics and the quantum nature of how it works, you know, like, holy cow, why doesn't everybody have this? Because, you know, it's elements in the monoatomic mm-hmm. state released from the salt crystal that you take into your body. These elements then become gold, platinum, silver, rhodium, iridium, whatever your body needs and the quotient it needs because of its quantum nature, it can become. and then cell by cell, chromosome by chromosome, it opens a channel to its counterpart that resides in your energy body or your light body.
Mm-hmm.
And so it begins to establish that connection. So if you're after more lucid dreamings, it's there. Because what more could anyone want to connect to than to themselves? You know, that's where you're going to get the truest and highest guidance, is from that greater aspect of yourself. You know, it's not, you know, a channel or something that comes in from another personality, but it comes in from that greater aspect of you. And as those trillions of channels are open to you, as your cells begin to replicate, because out of our adult male bodies, we have about 70 to 100 trillion cells. And this morning, you and I woke up needing to replace 300 billion of them. And most of them are red blood cells.
Mm-hmm.
And as you begin to, right now, what they do is simply copy themselves. They clone. And they carry mm-hmm. all of the mistakes and errors of our lifetime with them and pass that on to the next generation. But with this Ormus, then, that microtubule opens up and information from your light body comes through when that cell, whatever cell it is, needs to copy itself. And it says, mm-hmm. holy cow, this is what I'm supposed to look like. And you manifest the cell from that accurate template that resides in the mm-hmm. light body. And as you open these channels, there's a steadiness, there's a stillness, there's a depth to your being that you begin to experience that you haven't had, that you haven't been able to enjoy except in fleeting moments in deep meditation. And you begin to be able to live that. And as we go through the changes in our personal family and then as countrymen, as we go through these changes, having that depth of being is going to be a beautiful place to be able to live your life from. And
I agree 100%. I know there's a lot of technologies now that are creating a communication between your, some people call it the blue body, the etheric body, or your whole and healthy, perfect self, you know, back to the physical body, to the cells and organs and everything else. And this sounds like one of those technologies.
It's all information. It's just all information, you know, and I had discussions with Bill Teller, who was on, you know, down the rabbit hole, you know, mm-hmm. what the bleep do we know? And, you know, all of that information that we could pull from our etheric bodies, and if you can do it with any tool, any modality, you're ahead of the game. You're ahead of your neighbor, because then you're not taking, quote-unquote, medicine to try to fix the symptoms. You're actually going in and bringing in that proper template of how you were meant to be, how you were designed to be. And that just allows for some rapid evolution of your person. So,
yeah, I'd love to get some of that to play with it.
I can arrange that.
Now, if people want to get this, can they get that through your website?
Absolutely. They can get it from either weatherwars.info or bluewateralchemy.com. And, you know, we try to have it priced so anybody can afford it.
Right.
In the olden times, it was made from salt, and salt was precious, and it was the priesthoods and the royalties that were privy to an alchemist on staff, if you will, and the quantities of salt that it would require. And, you know, every salt has its different ratio of elements, whether it's Himalayan salt or Dead Sea salt or Celtic salt off the coast of France. You know, each salt mm-hmm. is different. And so there's different effects from each of those different salts. But, you know, rhodium and iridium are huge for genetics. And we're talking mm-hmm. about the evolvement of the human race. And if you can have these monoatomics in your DNA, when the etheric body begins to go through that evolvement, then it becomes much, much easier for the physical body to then manifest the proper additional new strands of coding that are coming to Earth.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's like plowing and planting the seed and waiting for it to happen.
You know, it's interesting, when the dinosaurs were taken out, basically there's a big, thick layer of iridium you know,
laid
out. So you start thinking, wait a second, you know, maybe they did plow and then reseed again, you know.
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's time for a new garden. It's time for a new season. You know, that happens on a regular basis. You don't want a planet living 4.5 billion years in a steady state. You know, where's the growth? Where's the experience for the planetary spirit as well? You know, it's all about change. And as soon as things quit changing, then there's something wrong. And that's something that Western man has erroneously believed, that things need to be steady, things need to be the same. And it never will be. It never can be. That's not how spirit works. Spirit is expansive. Spirit desires change. You know, spirit oscillates between experience. And as soon as you can let go and enjoy the ride, you know, then it's a joy. Then it's
a
joy.
It's quite a ride we've signed up for. I always tell people, you bought the e-ticket. You know, there's no victims. You chose this incarnation. Now you got to get back to the aspect of you that made that choice and why you made that choice, and then you'll figure everything out. But we are on an exciting ride, and there's no doubt about it. We're right in the heights of that roller coaster ride, you might say, in the next couple of years.
Well, and it feels like there's a cusp, that there's an event coming in. Are you familiar with Cliff High and Half Past Human and his work?
Yes, I am, and I put some calls out to get him on the show, but he really doesn't want to do as many interviews or something. He's kind of kicking back. So
he's that way. he's that way. Because I think he's been right enough about enough things over the last 10 years that he's kind of in the place of hunkering down right now, and he's preparing. He's got I suppose they're planning on an October 20th release for another body of work. But you know, he keeps hitting something like 4 or 8 November to about 12 November as a massive tipping point. Something on the scale of 100 to 10,000 times greater than what 9/11 was. You know, and they pegged 9/11, you know, many weeks ahead of time, and they called it a tipping point. But it was ID'd as a military disaster, or a military accident would be more accurate.
Have they ID'd this event? Because we've been getting very, very clear messages again and again and again about this November being a major shift, a major tipping point, you might say. But we haven't been able to get the details, and what we're getting is it's not just one event, that it's a series of events, and it has different levels to it.
And he says something very similar, that 50% of it seems to be economic, and the other 50% seems to be military-related with Israel at the crux point.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, and then a couple of days ago, there were a bunch of puts, financial puts, placed on energy companies based in Houston.
Mm-hmm.
And puts were placed against the airlines just prior to 9/11. You know, a put means you're putting it to your broker. So you're mm-hmm. essentially, it's not quite a short sale, but it's like you're buying the option to buy that stock in 30 days' time, and you are certain that it's going to be at a lower price. And
mm-hmm.
so there could be an energy aspect that we're seeing show up in the financial markets with whatever's going to happen.
And they seem to have a crystal ball that they mysteriously know exactly when a major event is going to unfold, and they always are in the right place financially for these events.
Yeah, it would be, well, I don't know if I want to trade along with them, but still, you're right. They leverage all of their all of their abilities. Yeah. So
that's probably why these events happen, you know, because there is so much leverage on it. You know, we just got a couple minutes left. You know, we'll probably have to wrap this up, but I know we gave out your website and the Ormus. I'm very curious about that. I'm always curious about any kind of healing technologies, and I'll definitely get a hold of you because I wanted to check into that myself and try it out. And is there anything else you want to end the show with?
Well, it's just you know, if we all were consuming ormus like the Essenes, you know, our recipe was recovered from a guy who had a past life as an Essene. He was a Washington State mm-hmm. man, a chemist. And, you know, if we all had that proper quotient of monoatomics in our body, we wouldn't be subject to cancer, to degenerative diseases.
Mm-hmm.
You know, our energy body would be readily accessible, and we would live at a far greater state of health. And, you know, yeah, Google it up and find it, do some research, because it truly is an amazing thing, even if it is simply for a meditation or spiritual practice use, because
mm-hmm.
it allows you to reach higher than you have been able to in the past. And that's a beautiful thing. It's a beautiful thing. So bluewateralchemy.com and then weatherwars.info, and then I've got my YouTube channel. I've got lots of time lapse and other explanatory videos over there on YouTube, and that's Weather Wars.
All right. Well, I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, and we'll have to do it again, and hopefully we'll have a bulletproof phone system next time around.
Oh, good luck with that. There's some things that just never can happen.
Yeah.
You just do your best.
All right. Hey, well, thank you so much for coming on the show, and we'll have to do it again real soon.
Thanks, James.
All right, we're out of time. This is James Gillen with As You Wish Talk Radio, and don't get upset about them cutting the phone line. You know, it just let it inspire you to dig into this more and get more information. It's all over the net. So anyway, have a good evening, and we're going out right now to see if we can see some stars. So good night, and watch the skies, and grab some of that ormus and tell me how it works. Anyway, have a good evening. Good night.